We're going to talk about more of the news that may be taking your attention as well. Fighting escalating in Syria, an unexpected vacancy on the Supreme Court, and the campaigns for the presidential nominations moving into South Carolina and Nevada. News analyst Neil Conan joins us now from his Macnut Farm on the Big Island to tie all of these stories together. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning. It gets cold here in Hawaii.
It does, doesn't it? Especially where you are. And at least a little bit wet, but hopefully that's good news for you. But getting onto the news of Syria, a series of attacks on the hospitals in northern Syria yesterday, dozens killed by bombs and those missiles allegedly fired by the Syrian government and Russian allies. This seems to be getting worse and worse.
Yeah, it does. And we should probably begin with two caveats. The Russians and the Syrian government say they did not conduct these attacks, and they blame the U.S.-led coalition. The U.S. said it did not have any aircraft in that area yesterday. Most observers believe that Russia did much of the bombing, and a Syrian missile may have done the rest. As for attacks on hospitals, we have to remember there can be mistakes. The U.S. hit a Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan last year. The U.S. infamously hit the Chinese embassy in Belgrade during the war in Kosovo, so even precision attacks can and do go horribly wrong. But in Syria, there is a pattern of these kinds of attacks by the government, hundreds of strikes on hospitals and clinics that are apparently designed to depopulate rebel areas or at least make them much harder to live in. So, you know, I guess the best guess is another horrible day in an especially horrible war.
A bright spot might be that there's supposed to be a ceasefire in Syria as of Friday. Is this, though, what we kind of see in front of ceasefire deadlines where both sides try to get their licks in just before the shooting stops?
That could be. But I have to say, at this point, that's the most optimistic scenario. The Russians say, you know, no matter what happens, they intend to keep right on bombing what they call terrorist targets. Yesterday, President Bashar al-Assad said his forces will continue to attack terrorists. The rebels are unlikely to lay down their weapons if they're being attacked. So right now, there's little expectation that fighting will even diminish, much less cease on Friday. And there has to be deep concern about the humanitarian side of this ceasefire that was negotiated a couple of weeks ago by Secretary of State Kerry, whether that can work now. That's the delivery of food and medicine to communities under siege. They're under siege mostly by government forces, but by rebels too in some places. And it's important to note that ISIS was not part of any of these talks, of course. They never agreed to any ceasefire. So, you know, right now the prospects look pretty bleak.
Most of these attacks were in the area of Aleppo, a major rebel-held city where Russian bombs have been paving the way for government successes in recent days. We always say how complicated this conflict is, but reports are suggesting that it's even more complicated now than usual.
That's a good point, Beth Ann. It's so hard to keep track of who's fighting who and where and why. Now, according to today's New York Times, for example, a group led by Kurdish militias is taking advantage of those Russian airstrikes to occupy territory near the Turkish border. Now, this is a group that's supported by the United States. The Kurds have been the most effective group against ISIS. But right now, they're being shelled by Turkey from across the border. Turkey, of course, is another American ally, a member of NATO. Turkey vows to prevent any further advances by the Kurds. That could well mean more intervention inside Syria by Turkey. At the same time, the anger between Turkey and Russia is deepening as the Turks believe the Russians are helping their worst enemies, the Kurds. And now the Saudis, yet another American ally, are threatening to send ground troops into Syria from Turkey.
Is that a real possibility? I mean, wouldn't Turkish and Saudi troops in Syria make things even more complicated?
Oh, yes, indeed they would. Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov talked the other day. If Saudi troops go in, he said this could lead to world war. Now, this wasn't a threat. This was, you know, things spiraling out of control, a worst-case scenario kind of thing. And a lot of observers think that what Saudi Arabia and Turkey are doing is really trying to get the United States to take a more muscular role, to do something in their thinking before it's too late. Their spokesmen have acidly pointed to the Obama administration's, you know, long-standing position that there's no military solution in Syria. And they say, well, it turns out there is a military solution, but it's Russia's military solution, and it's leading to a victory by President Assad.
All right. Well, for the moment, let's just leave that one and turn to a conflict where the talk of scorched earth is just a metaphor, but nonetheless potent for folks in Washington with all the political talk around the successor to Antonin Scalia. Now, the president says that he's going to make a nomination. Republican Senate leaders say any Obama nominee is going to be dead on arrival, and that we should all wait until after the election, see who's president. And, of course, all the presidential candidates have been weighing in. How do you see this playing out?
Well, we're going to know a lot more after President Obama makes his next move. The ball is in his court. The most likely outcome is that the Republicans are going to do exactly what they said they would do. They'll bottle up any nomination in the Senate Judiciary Committee while both sides use the issue to, you know, whip up their base. You know, Republicans charge that, you know, it's a lame duck president trying to capture the Supreme Court to foster a left-wing agenda on guns and abortion and gay marriage. The Democrats charge that Republican obstructionists are defying their constitutional duty for partisan reasons, hoping to turn back the clock on gay marriage and union rights and on Obamacare.
Okay, so whose name does the president send up then?
Well, that is the next move. Or, you know, let's say he nominates a moderate. Republicans might think, he or she is no Scalia, but better than we'll get from a newly elected President Clinton or a President Sanders. So they may want to, you know, wait a bit and see how the election is shaping up. So, you know, there's an outside chance maybe a moderate nominee might actually get a vote, maybe even a confirmation, but that's a very outside chance. So does the president nominate a woman or an African-American or a Latino to raise the political costs, the electoral costs for the Republicans for obstruction? Or does the president nominate, you know, some fire-breathing liberal, which makes, you know, Republican rejection easier, but could energize the Democratic base? I guess it could energize both bases.
Okay, well, there could be a combination. Maybe a moderate Asian-American, for example. Lots of people are talking about Sri Srinivasan or Jacqueline Nguyen as possible candidates, both federal appeals court judges, both confirmed by the same Senate just a couple of years ago, but both by lopsided margins.
Right, that's exactly right. And after, you know, but after all the political tactics, we have to remember this is, you know, a truly momentous decision. This next Supreme Court justice either locks in the conservative majority or swings the balance to the left. And we mentioned just a few issues: health care, immigration, voting rights, union rights, abortion. Every single one of those are on the Supreme Court docket right now. Now, probably the Obama nomination does not get through. And that makes the outcome of this presidential campaign even more dramatic.
All right, well, let's talk about that a bit. Last week, you got New Hampshire mostly right. Certainly the winners, Trump and Sanders. What's your call for when we talk next week and Democrats will have caucused in Nevada and Republicans will have voted in South Carolina?
Nevada's just tough. There's so little polling there. Everything you do see suggests it's getting closer. But I think Hillary Clinton wins by more than she won in Iowa, which was not very much, but by a lot less than Bernie Sanders won in New Hampshire, which was quite a bit. South Carolina, I think Trump's lead dwindles, but Trump, Cruz won 2, Rubio, Bush 3-4, but that order could flip. Then Ben Carson and John Kasich trail, probably Carson ahead, Kasich rather, ahead of Carson.
Okay, Chris Christie, Carly Fiorina, Jim Gilmer, all dropped out. More casualties after South Carolina?
Hard to see why Ben Carson would stay in if he's way back in the pack. Kasich is going to try to hold on until the campaign gets to more moderate states. That's going to be a while. The big question is be for whomever does worst between Rubio and Bush. If there's a clear loser there, he's going to face a lot of pressure to drop out and clear the field for, you know, the alternative to Cruz and Trump. So we'll see, but maybe not quite yet.
All right, Neil. Thanks.
Talk to you next week, Beth Ann.
You bet. News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from his farm on the Big Island. You can also hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.